Hello, and welcome back to Slut PhD. I am your host, Julie Fennell, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing my friend Doug Robinson, and we're going to be talking about complications in terms of gender roles. A reminder that this podcast is intended for people who are adults in the area where they are listening, and in the United States, that would be people ages 18 and over. We will be talking about some fragile subjects, let's say potentially triggering subjects, definitely. The word FAG is likely to show up as we're talking about male gender socialization, masculine gender socialization. So please be kind to yourself and think about that ahead of time. But we're going to be talking about gender in terms of, like, not at the edges, I think is how I would best describe this. And I'm going to take a moment to let Doug introduce himself real fast, and then I want to go over some gender 101 before we get into the complex stuff that we're going to talk about today.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Doug Robinson, and in short, I'm a guy who likes to write plays and has always found a close relationship to femininity in my life, but also identifies as a cis man.
Great. So I want to make sure, in case there's anybody listening, I suspect this is probably more for the benefit of people who listen to this, found it very compelling and have now given it to a relative. but making sure that we clarify that there's a difference between gender and sexual orientation. So historically, in America at least, we've been really bad at distinguishing between those two things. And I actually have a sociologist in mind who I would really love to interview, and I might do so, who's done some really good work on this recently. But looking at the way that, in fact, gender nonconformity and sexual orientation do overlap, but they are distinct. So it is possible, for example, to be a very masculine guy and still be gay. And if you read some of the work of David Levithan, there's a really fun novel by David Levithan and Nina LaCour, both of whom are great queer writers. It's a young adult novel. One of the main characters is a young gay man, and he's very masculine. And it's both a joke, but also a little hard that he sort of constantly has to come out, because no one reads him as gay, even other gay men. And so there's, like, the challenge that is that thing, or, like, one of my dear best friends, who is a very feminine lesbian, who was told things like, you're too pretty to be a lesbian, and also constantly has to come out because people, neither, again, queer or not queer, generally do not read her as such. But also the opposite can be possible. You can be a very masculine woman who is still straight. You can be a very feminine man who's still straight. And I think we as a culture have even less understanding and appreciation for what that can be. And certainly, statistically speaking, there's a pretty decent overlap between being relatively gender nonconforming and being kind of queer. And so that aspect does get reinforced by reality, but these things are distinct. It is definitely possible to be fairly gender conforming and still be gay or queer. And so it's important to keep that in mind as we're talking about gender socialization and sexuality, that these things are related, but still on separate lines of two different spectra. The other thing that we really want to talk about today, this is getting out of the 101 and into something else, is just thinking about the existing gender spectrum that we are given as a culture, where we go from, like, masculine to feminine, and nowadays we've started adding, like, a genderqueer thing that's in the middle there. We still have a pre-existing label of butch, which is for masculine women who still identify as women. But the thing that Doug and I want to talk about is the thing that I think is missing on our spectrum, which is feminine men who still identify as men. Like, We as a culture have come to accept the idea that women might show up for their weddings wearing a tux, but there's not much understanding. Although, admittedly, I think we'd be pretty surprised if a straight woman did that. But there's really not much understanding of the idea that a man might show up to his wedding wearing a dress.
Yeah.
So why don't you start talking to us about your experience of gender?
Yeah, again, thank you for doing this podcast. I'm really excited to be a part of it. And I think early on in my life, I knew that I found women's clothing or perceived to be women's clothing, because clothing exists without gender, but what is perceived to be women's clothing really fascinating. I remember finding the idea of silk and lace and the touch of those on my skin really comforting, not just in a kind of like arousal kind of way, because that can happen, but also just like a comfort and a kind of recognition that I can feel really beautiful in this. And I'm talking like somewhere between like 12, 13 years old is when like I started to notice this. And this also coincided with the part of my life where most of my friends, if not all of my friends at this time, were people who identified as women. So where I was finding these lace or silk things was like being friends with them and going to the mall with them and helping them shop for things, because we're also like early teenagers and we get to go and our parents dropped us off, but we're kind of alone, so we're kind of adults, and people are like, oh, I'm gonna buy this bra, and I'm like in there. And at first it was a little like weird being a part of that group as like we get older, like 13, 14, 15, but it then became very normal for me to engage in those spaces and to give feedback in those spaces and to dream about getting my own set of something silky or lacy. And it was around that age of like 15 that I bought my first like bra set. Of course, it didn't fit me at all because I just thought it was pretty. And I was like, this is super pretty. And I put it on. And it, again, like I said, it didn't fit, but it was nice, and I hope to figure out a way to find a way to get it to fit. Of course, time goes forward, and like I have other things to worry about. This did not take up so much frontal space in my mind because I just liked a thing. It didn't cause me any confusion in myself, but when my friends learned about this, they were confused. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you have this? I'm like, oh, I just think it's like pretty. Like, you have it, but like, but yes, but I have the parts for it. I'm like, right, but like, it also just looks good. Like, it's also just aesthetically pleasing. And when you're interested in a kind of aesthetic of soft, of sweet, as I've always kind of enjoyed, even in my younger days, my mother would say that I was her like Vogue baby. She put me in very like fantastical outfits with lots of colors and shapes. It wasn't a kind of like, here's a blue shirt with a truck on it because you're a boy. It was just like, oh, what is a pretty palette? So I've always been attracted to things of that pretty palette, and that's kind of the beginning of my journey into exploring, not just in terms of my behavior and my interests, but just like the things that I wear that represent a kind of femininity or woman in a very 2000 sense of the term, right? I'm not a sociologist. I don't have the language, but just like, oh, it was like 2006 and 7 and 8 when like I was thinking about these things, and it was like I didn't have the language at that moment in my teen years, like genderqueer at that moment. So that's why I will say, like, oh, woman, not to be uninviting to all, but just that's how it felt in those moments.
Yeah, so I assume that as you got older, you must have encountered people who had more of a response. You're talking about the initial response. So please tell about the initial response, and then I assume that changed both as the times changed as you got older. Like, how did people respond when you're younger versus how they've responded as you've gotten older and the times have changed?
Yeah, so again, in the younger days, if we're speaking specifically about clothing, I wasn't, you know, talking in my science class about going to the mall and buying a thong or anything of that nature. And I think because I've always been in theater, my friends were theater kids, so we were a kind of outcast. Let's not pretend that all theater kids are complete outcasts. Like, the high school strata is very interesting, but like, we were a kind of outcast and we were a kind of accepting. So I didn't feel ostracized, but I did feel like people said, huh, that's an interesting thing. But as I got older and I started to explore this kind of appearance in specifically queer spaces, oftentimes people would come up to me and start to use gender nonconforming language around like they, them pronouns when they'd say hi. And I had not introduced myself in that way. People would begin to use she, her pronouns for wearing these things. And again, none of these things felt bad. None of them didn't feel okay. It just was like, oh, that's not me. I don't feel outside of the gender that I am, or let me say, rephrase, I do not feel other than male in this moment. Like in this beautiful, like purple teddy, I do not feel like I am a woman. I am not attempting to be woman. I'm not attempting to be something other than masculine or male either. But I felt a kind of expectation from the people around me. And again, I'm older now, I'm like 22, 23, that I was just not investigating myself enough. That really you are exploring what is a piece of your identity, but you're too scared to go deeper. Mm. And I'm like, I don't think I'm scared. I just don't think there's a depth to it. And I think in a lot of my life, right, even before we get into finding feminine clothing, just my interests, right, as a young boy growing up, as a black boy growing up, where I grew up, having an interest in dance and song and theater, the assumption by like the peers of my parents were, oh, Douglas is gonna, he's like that, right? And my mom's like, I mean, I don't think he is, but there was even a moment when my mother and I were watching the movie Birdcage with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane, and I'm having a great time because it's a fantastic film. My mother turns and she says, you know, it'd be okay. Since you seem to be having such a good time with this movie, it would be okay if you were. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I'm not. Now we can talk about how that the way I identify sexually has grown, of course, not to deny what my mother may have seen or what others may have seen, but this idea that because I was interested in X, it then proved that I must be X. Mm. Where really I was just a person who thought that Nathan Lane's portrayal of this like housewife was brilliant, and I wanted to quote that movie all of the time. And just like other aspects, like being in theater for so long, which is like the trope, like every like there's like one straight man in theater, but if there's six of us in a room, five of you have to be like waiting or figuring it out. Right, it was just a thing. It's like, oh, there's a lot of straight guys in the theater, and if you look at the kids, the guys I went to high school with, most of us, if not all of us, have come out as some sort of queer in some kind of identifying way. But it didn't remove my relationship to my gender, right? That I never felt not a man, and oftentimes being close to what was feminine was looked at as no longer being a man, even for the men who were there who were gay, but these are gay men, right? It was kind of being that proximity to femininity just removed any ability for you to stand in your masculinity. Something I've been trying to do over the course of these last couple of years is really expand what can be considered the masculine. In the way I interact with people, the way I'm open about my life, and the way that I celebrate that I think masculinity has been a cage for so long. And how do we open that door and invite a kind of exploration of what can be masculine? You know, like where's our version of women deciding to wear pants and still being women?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. When I think about some of these studies of the overlaps between gender and sexual orientation, my favorite, which is so deeply weird, is the LISP.
I have a LISP.
Yeah. Well, okay, so one of the things that's really amazing when they've done this cross-culturally, so other languages have found that young boys their parents, you know, at least will describe in their youth as being gender nonconforming, have lisps. So this is not something that's unique to the American cultural context. It's not something that's unique to the English language. They have not found, when they go through the data, that there is a precise correlation between lisps and sexuality. But they have found that it is a very strong correlation for men and gender, people born male, and gender nonconformity, which I think is really wonky, and especially because they've looked and there is no parallel for women. So gender non-conforming people born female don't have some quirky speech thing, and like, you know, people born female who are masculine don't have a lisp, for example, or vice versa even. Also, the thing that's really, really quirky for that is that in these cultures and languages, like, feminine people don't have lisps. So it's specifically, you know, people born male who have lisps. And the gay writer David Sedaris talks about this in his book Me Talk Pretty One Day, where he refers to his speech therapy class in elementary school as being the future gay alliance, is just full of these boys with lisps. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's like, we all know what we're going to grow up and be gay. And so, you know, I think it's intriguing to imagine like how people respond to that and the expectation, like, oh, well, if you have this lisp growing up and you are like clearly you're into dance and theater and all that, like, I imagine most of the people around you are probably like, well, you know, Doug must be gay, right?
All of the time. All of the time. And and I think what is interesting in our contemporary moment, right? So if I go back to like being younger, being a kid, teenagers, you know, Obama administration, all that stuff, very much looked at as like gay. Oftentimes when I was much younger, other kids would like throw a lot of specifically like homophobic slurs my way. But I think in a beautiful way, my behavior currently is no longer looked at as an obvious sign of queerness. Mm-hmm. Like actually I have gone from being in my specific like Virginian community as someone who is obviously queer in some way, shape, or form, to being relatively straight passing in a lot of my more adult spaces in comparison. So like our understanding of queerness and how it has, and again, I have not studied this, but the kind of awareness that queerness can be a variety of things has now left me at times assumed to be less queer than I've always been.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I found for myself as I got older that I got increasingly perceived as queer, which I was happy about. But I remember a moment relatively early on, because I spent most of my adult life just being, you know, in a relationship with my husband, who was a cis man. I was bisexual, but like hadn't done anything about it. And I remember being in New York and there were these lesbians who like gave me like the eye across the way. That was like, ah, one of us. And I remember commenting to someone, I was like, when did I eat enough pussy that now I like qualify for the gay like handshake or whatever? Like, I don't know at what point. And certainly I reached a point in my life too, where it felt like as long as I didn't tell people that I had a husband, like most of the people around me, it felt like even if they were straight, were mostly reading
right,
me
there's
as,
something
right. Yeah. They're like increasingly reading me as queer, even though I'm pretty gender conforming in terms of my presentation. Part of why I guess I think a lot about this for myself too is because whenever I've taken like any sort of gender quiz or whatever, it's like, yeah, your brain is 100% masculine. And then this shocks people who don't know me well because they dress really girly. But I'm like, yeah, except I think that probably fits. So I've thought a lot about what it means to do gender in ways that are outside of the way that we currently have set up this like one line spectrum from masculine to feminine, where it's like, but what are the things that come to define masculinity? What Yes. are the things that come to define femininity? And to my mind, a lot of times, I think of gender presentation as just a style. And like, I feel like that in a lot of queer spaces these days feels very offensive to say, where I'm like, no, I feel like gender is just something I can put on, like a costume. And most of the time, like, Like, if I dress up more masculine, that's kind of how I feel. Like, yes, I enjoy doing this thing as a way to like play, but I mean, I don't feel attached to any of these things anymore than any other, and it's hard for me to feel like it's loaded. And when I hang out with you, I often feel like it's the same, where you're like, this is clothes. It's a pretty costume that I put on, and the society has decided to load it with lots of meaning, but it doesn't necessarily inherently have any of those meanings. If you look back historically, it was totally common for men in like 1700s France to wear fancy clothes and lots of lace and high heels and makeup. And like, it didn't make them not be men.
Well, I think what that makes me think about then is how do we then imbue things with meaning, right? Like, if for so long people didn't have a way or the language to identify themselves, right? Like, when one can find a way, whether it's through a label or through an article of clothing, that then becomes a way to assert one's identity in a very powerful, affirming, and also in a community-building way. Like, oh, if I see you wear this, it tells me that we could be in a kind of kinship. Whereas the thing itself, just as you're saying, exists, right? Like, I can wear a tulle skirt, and that tulle skirt has no idea what it's covering. It is not like I'm doing my job, making sure I am announcing to the world this person's understanding of themselves. But what that tulle skirt allows me to do is allows me to explore the freedom of what it invites into me. Again, to this idea of costume. And I think both of us having a theatrical background, like, is proof. And I think a lot of theater people and artists in general understand that, like, actually, objects can invite sides of ourselves out. But it doesn't mean that that side of ourself is less than when it is not present, right? That actually what objects or attire or even like speech can do is give us access and language for other parts of ourselves that may not be the part for us for this moment, right? Like, I'm not going to be that person to say I'm going to wear a tulle skirt every day. Like, it may not be the best thing to go to like my grandmother's vow renewal in this tulle skirt right here, right now. But that does not mean that doesn't still exist in me. So how can I still hold that within me while I am, for this moment, wearing a two-piece suit? Does my identity actually change for myself as my me, Doug Robinson, due to what I wear, or does it really just allow me to enhance it when I choose to put this on today?
Yeah, so how do you end up making decisions about context? So for a reference, right now Doug's wearing fairly conventional masculine attire and got like kind of green khaki-ish pants on and like a ripped tank top. So like, how do you decide on a day-to-day basis like what it is that you're gonna do in terms of your dress? And is that about gender presentation for you, do you think? Or do you think it is more of just a stylistic decision?
Oh, I think it's not an either or, right? I think those answers actually flow to it. I mean, today, honestly, it's because I stayed at my partner's place, and this was truly the only clean bit of clothing I had when I was leaving her place this morning. Not to say that, like, if I had other clothing there, I would have put something else on because it's a warm day and these pants are very stretchy and I don't know how much I'm gonna move today, but also this tank top is really cute because I like the color. But I think, and I want to always be clear that I am never going to be speaking for anyone other than myself, right? I am never going to be trying to claim a knowledge about queerness or a representation that extends beyond my own individual autonomy. There are days where I think, how do I want to feel today? What will give me courage? What will give me freedom? What will help me just move through? And going back to this idea of clothing specifically as costume, you put on a cape when you're a kid and you feel brave, right? I put on a skirt and I feel pretty. Right? I put on a suit jacket and I say, I guess I'm gonna like kick ass in this interview. Now we can talk about how those things themselves can be gendered, right? Like me saying I wanna put on a suit jacket and kick ass in this interview versus saying I wanna feel pretty, I put on a skirt. Like we're creating a kind of gendered thing there. So something I'm hoping to do in my life is to, as I continue to exist, let the skirt be the thing I can wear to say I'm going to kick ass in this interview.
Yeah.
And let the suit jacket be the thing that I wear that says I feel pretty. Not handsome, not good looking, but pretty. But I only ever get called pretty when I wear the skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, if I, the words that I feel most inspired by when they used to refer to me are lovely, are pretty, are sweet. Because these are things I've always valued, because I value lovely things. I value pretty things. I value sweet things. But people don't say that to me when I'm wearing like my two-piece, three-piece suit.
Yeah. Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. I remember in grad school, actually, I ended up writing a paper for, I think I was taking like, I would say feminist theory class, and was talking about symbolism, and I wrote a whole paper, basically, it was kind of a rant about, it wasn't very a very good paper, about how the symbolism associated with suits and their like associations with capitalism and their associations with gender, and how, you know, one of my major aspirations in life was to never be in a situation where I felt the need to wear one,
mm-hmm.
because it felt so out of line with my own like costuming presentation, but also out of line with my values. And I'm interested as you're saying that, because I'm thinking, I think part of my own struggle for that is that in my head, I like, when I feel sexy, I feel powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like to a large degree, our culture has taught women to not feel that way. Or it's like, if you feel sexy now, if you're looking sexy, you're in a vulnerable position.
Mm-hmm.
And so you couldn't be powerful because now people are going to objectify you. And where could there be power in that, basically? Which is a fun mental argument to have with oneself, and back to the old like argument about who's in power in a stripper situation, right? It's like, is it the person who's dancing or is it the person who's throwing money at them? But I remember always for myself, like my models of women who I was like, these are powerful women who I adored were Cleopatra and Eleanor of Aquitaine, both of whom were very powerful feminine leaders who did not give up their sexuality or their beauty. And I was like, that, I want that to be a model for who I could be. But I feel like if you're talking about men, right, like traditional visions of masculinity, there's hardly a concept there of like sexy as powerful, right? Like it's obviously this, like powerful men are like supposed to be moderately attractive, but look good in a suit.
Yeah.
Right? And that's like where that ends, basically.
Yeah. And again, I'm trying to think about where I got the idea, right, that wearing the skirt, to keep going back to that image,
mm-hmm.
is where how I feel pretty. And I am just very happy that because the people who I was mostly around in my life have been women who I loved and accepted me more than anyone else, maybe, and I'm having this idea now, maybe there was a kind of like understanding or emulation of them because they thought they were beautiful. It was never like, oh, I'm watching TV and I see this person on TV and oh, there it is, because I've never thought about it that way, right? Like, I want to be clear, like, as a black boy growing up, like, my role models on the television growing up in the 90s and 2000s, there still wasn't this proliferation of, like, black role models that I could see outside of, like, we knew that Denzel was, like, a handsome fucking man, right? Taye Diggs, a handsome man. And I love those people in those movies, but I never quite felt like that kind of mirror of like, oh yeah, that's the thing I want to emulate.
Yeah.
But I will say, and this is again coming to me now as I'm going through this Rolodex of things. Why am I forgetting that actor's name? So the film Queen of the Damned, right? I remember seeing that on like HBO, like scrolling through and seeing her in this very like sensual, like, gorgeous, gorgeous outfit, playing Akasha, who is the mother of all vampires.
And it's the actress
Aaliyah. And that being a moment of like, ooh, not just like, ooh, she's sexy and like, oh, I want to like be in a sexual relation. No, just like, oh, I love that look.
Yeah.
And it was ornate and it was smooth and she was like water. And I'm like, how is a human being like water? And I think about that in terms of like, oh, I would like to like experience that kind of like fluid movement. Which goes back to the idea of like, what is gender queer? What is fluidity? What is one thing, not the other? But really, we are all oceans, so we contain it all. And because she's like the queen of the vampires, this is a very like sexy, strong, like everyone is scared because she's awoken. Like, oh fuck, like. Like we're, and it's a bad movie. It's a bad adaptation of a great book. Anne Rice's Queen of the Damned, or Vampire Series, so good. Bad film. But her performance and her portrayal was deeply inspiring and did feel powerful, and not in the way, again, where I'm like, oh, it's sexy and I want you, but more like powerful. And I'm like, I'm enamored. I admire this.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have mentioned race a few times, and I definitely want to bring up in this great book called Dude, You're a Fag by C.J. Pascoe, which is a sociological study of high school students right around the time, I think. It's from around the era that you were growing up, maybe just a little bit later than that. But at least one of the observations that she made in her research was that the young boys that she was observing and interviewing at the time, the white boys were just throwing around the F word right and left, right? And like, this was just like it felt like half the things they said, and they were constantly accusing one another of this. And her research, at least, she found that Black boys were not doing this, which she was like, I mean, on the one hand, and there's been a fair bit of research in general that suggests that young Black boys receive less strict gender socialization than young white boys do. However, she found that like there were these moments where if they went too far, if Black boys started throwing around the F word, that was bad and often literally led to physical altercations. And certainly, you know, she in that book actually documents like the experience of like a young Black boy in that school who's extremely gender nonconforming, and how, you know, people still aren't especially accepting. I mean, you've thrown around mentions of race here. Do you feel like you have any stories or anecdotes that like really represent some of what like may have been different or maybe not, at least from your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, I will say like I grew up in a majority white space, and the F word was thrown around in constantly, specifically in the way other boys would bully me. Like I think that was the word that was used the
most. Mostly white boys, is this both?
Mostly white boys would use that. And again, to this point that like they're very cavalier with this word. Like, so I never felt like a deep threat on my personhood when they would do it. It was just like a sign of other and difference. But I was still like in the same gym in the after school class, right? I didn't feel like left out. Whereas when I would go to specifically my church and spend time with my church friends on the weekends, which was an all Black space, that was again another opportunity for me to be mostly, if not completely, engaging with young Black women who I felt a deep like relationship with and friendship with, and an ostracization from the other Black boys of my age. And I kind of like, Doug's is weird, you know. I don't recall too much of the F word itself from them, but definitely like, I was not a man to them. I was not a guy. I was not part of the crew that would happen, you know, when it's like, oh, we got a church, we're all gonna go down to the McDonald's. Like, I was never like invited to when the boys went down to McDonald's, but it would be me and some of the girls who would go down to McDonald's. But I remember going to a church retreat in my teen years. I'm about 14 years old. And again, I have never at this point in my life not identified as like straight. And over on that retreat, I met another young woman and we just hit it off. We were just laughing. She was from a different church and I'd sit with her and we were talking, but it was a flirtation. It was an obvious flirtation that the other boys could see. So in this moment, they are now watching me exhibit a kind of like masculine behavior of like meeting this other young woman and putting the moves on, which I want to be clear, I have never been good at putting the moves. That is not, I just make eye contact a lot. I don't really have moves. I'm bad at it. When I try to have moves, it falls apart. But the deep shift that happened between my relationship with those boys after they saw me with this woman who, I want to be clear, like, I've been spending time with women in front of them for years. Like, I've been going to this church since I was 4 years old, and I've grown up with these people and grown up with the boys, grown up with the girls. But because of that kinship, it didn't ever seem like a kind of, like, flirtation was going on. This moment of them watching this happen had them like falling all over themselves, like, dog, man, you're the man, man. Like, well, all these things was going on. I'm like, hi, okay, cool. But it was this moment where they witnessed me participate in a kind of masculine ritual of like seeing someone who is a woman, a young girl, because again, we're all teenagers here. We don't want to age people up like that. That's weird. And flirting, like having a crush. And for some reason, that to them erased all of the things prior. And for the next couple of years while I was still going to that church, like I felt like I had created a bond with these men, but not because of something we shared together, but because I finally did a thing that proved to them that I was actually more in line with who they were than I was this other thing.
Interesting. Do you feel like responded to you as like more positively if they perceive you as being more straight, or do they perceive you as being more deviant by being straight?
Again, I'm going to keep going back to my childhood. My father, who has never thought I was not straight, like even my mother would like be like, maybe. My father has never thought I was not straight. But he would always ask this question, how do these parents, particularly how do these fathers of the girls you're friends with, like just let you be over there all the time? Right? Like what? Like how are you getting away? And I'm like, well, first off, Dad, there's nothing going on because, A, there's nothing going on. But I think that I was always perceived in my specific circumstances of, like, the parents of my friends as, quote-unquote, a safe black boy. Mm. Like, I was not going to get their daughters, their little white daughters, if we're talking about, like the schools I grew up in, I wasn't going to get them pregnant, right? I was respectful to the parents. I remember there was a dear friend of mine, I was over at her house for a project we were making, and I meet her father for the first time, and I know that he's a more conservative man, but we have good conversation, and we're talking, and we're laughing, and everything's going fine, and I leave, and I get a text from my friend, and she was like, Doug, my father just asked me if you gay, and so he had felt while I was there that I was gay. And she says, I told him no, because at this point in my life, like, no, I'm a straight guy. Like, I'm not thinking about it in those terms. And her father said, good, because if he was gay, he wouldn't be allowed in. Whoa. So there were certain spaces where, like, my appearance of queerness, right, actually allowed me access to a kind of like inter sanctum that these parents would let me be around their daughters when we can talk about race and gender and masculine and feminine in like my Northern Virginia suburb. But there was another space, and this is a friend who is to this day one of my closest friends, who like she and I have, like we are family at this point, whose own father had a lovely time with me. but had to ensure I was not gay, or if I had been, I would not have been able to be in this space. So I was just queer enough that his sensors went off, but it was not like, cool, my daughter's safe. It was like, wait a second.
Oh my.
What's going on here?
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the main character of the novel that I just finished, we'll see if anyone ever actually wants to publish it, but he has a lot in common with you, and partly because I was just very, I started the novel years before I ever met you, but I did write more of it, at least after I had met you for a hot second, but not much more than a hot second. But like, his experiences really parallel a lot of that. Like, he grows up with everyone just assuming that he's gay in like a queer space, and so as he gets older, he's like, actually, I don't think I'm quite as gay as everybody thinks I am. But one of the things he says to, I have him say towards the end of the novel is like, in gay spaces, people never really challenge his gender as much as they do, ironically, in both queer and straight spaces. Like, in gay spaces, gay men are just like, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, if you head to queer spaces, people are now like, so have you thought about transitioning? He's like, well, straight people don't ask me that either, right? So I am curious, in terms of your own experience, like, I imagine people have asked you this question.
Oh, yeah.
And what is your usual response, and how do you think about it?
Well, so I have this tattoo. Because it's a podcast, you cannot see it. But I usually point to the tattoo as like my answer, and it is a tattoo of a seahorse underneath a sunflower. It is a seahorse because I remember learning that male seahorses carried the baby. And if we will listen to the Republican ideology, that is what women do. Women carry babies. Everything. If you, that's all you, that's it. And I'm like, oh God, that's wild. But it is, quote unquote, a specifically feminine thing to carry a baby. And we want to be very clear that we understand that, like, all kinds of people can be mothers and carry babies. Like, it is not a cis woman thing. But as a teenager, learning that male seahorses do something that at the time I understood to be such an inherently feminine thing was really comforting to me. It told me that actually in the greater nature, right? If you listen to my mother, she would talk about God right now, that like God actually made space for all of it. Like, actually there is no world in which God created any person or thing that was wrong. So that like, if male seahorses are the ones who carry babies, there is room in my male body for a kind of femininity to not only exist, but to be a purposeful thing. A thing that, like, I can hold on to, engage with, and lead with. So it is here on my body as a tool to talk to people about that masculinity. In my masculinity, I want it to be as expansive as possible. That I am more interested in opening up this cisgender identity that I have to hold much more than it's ever been historically allowed to have. And it is underneath a sunflower because there's a picture of me as a young boy underneath a sunflower, getting shade, almost being protected. So the idea that like the femininity in me is always being protected by the sunflower, which demands to be seen by all.
Mm. I think that's an amazing anecdote to end this with. And hopefully I will try to get a picture of your tattoo so I can post it along with the podcast when it goes up. Thank you for listening. I promise there will be more episodes on this podcast about gender. So there will be lots more thoughts about the oddly middling ranges, I guess you could call it, of the gender spectrum. I really hope that our culture continues to broaden this perspective. And when I say our culture, I mean not just mainstream culture, but also queer culture too, which I think there's a lot left to think about as we ponder really more about what the difference is between biological sex, you know, the thing that is your body, versus gender, which is this thing that you like identify as, and then gender presentation, which is this thing that people perceive you as. We have so much left to explore, and it's really cool to be able to talk to someone who is as articulate as Doug about their complicated experiences of those things. I will be posting on social media along with this where you can see, hopefully, one of Doug's plays in the not terribly distant future. He does not have much of a social media presence. So
I just take candid photos and put them on my Instagram. It's not even much of me, actually.
Does not presently have any plays published, but hopefully in the near future.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And I definitely will post about that if he gets any published in the future. But yeah, in the meantime, I'll try to post something about any places that you can see his plays in the near future. And thank you for listening.